Valentine's Day. Create a space that feels warm and welcoming with help from Menards. Whether it's a small refresh or a big project, Menards has the tools and materials you need. Build something together and make your home a place you both love coming back to. Don't forget the sweets for your sweetheart. Get a 6-ounce bag of Russell Stover chocolate candies for $3.99 now through February 14th. Save big money and finish your projects together at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and we have another amazing episode for you today. Before we dive into today's topic, of course, a couple of quick announcements. Number one, thank you all once again, as always, for downloading, listening to, rating, reviewing the show. Please continue doing that along with sharing it with other wine-loving friends and family of yours. It's hugely helpful in spreading kind of the reach of what we do and getting a little bit more airtime out there. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. We are certainly the most active on YouTube. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel. It's a lot more than just the podcast. It's regular vineyard, cellar updates, tasting notes, all kinds of cool stuff to dive into if you're a wine lover. Instagram, of course, are some of those updates are also posted there. You can find us on the Book of Face as well as on the social network formerly known as Twitter. At MTGA Wines will be our handle for all of those. Head to our website, mtgawines.com. If you want to submit any questions for our monthly Q&A episodes, or if there are just topics that you would like us to dive into, you can go to our homepage, scroll down towards the bottom. There's a little email form you can fill out to submit questions. You can also slide into our DMs on any of those social networks I mentioned. I think that about does it. I think we're ready to dive into today's topic. And today's topic is going to be a little bit more of a soapbox. And I haven't really done an episode like this over the last year and a half or so, but I figured it's about time. You know, as many of you might expect, you know, for wine podcasts, you know, what we really try and do for a lot of these, if you listen to other food and wine podcasts, you know, we really try and dispel a lot of the stuff that kind of happens behind the scenes that, you know, other, you know, people just might not know. Parts of the winemaking process from grape to bottle that we kind of keep hidden in our cellars and don't talk a lot about. Stuff like the additives we've been talking about recently. Stuff like blending decisions and how we actually kind of go through those in our head and with our taste buds and how we evaluate these things on a sensory basis. You know, the trials and tribulations of being a wine business. What it means to, you know, get a wine business started, the money that's involved, kind of the flow of business that you need, whether you're going big and trying to be a big producer or trying to stay small. We've covered a lot of topics. And in and around all of these things, it's interesting because what we'll be talking about today kind of binds all of this together, but in not the best way. This is one of those moments, and this happens probably once a year, maybe twice a year, where even myself, I get a little disenchanted with the wine industry as a whole. And there's typically a couple of main reasons. One is, you know, when you have a slower year like we're having, you know, money is a little tighter, you know, it's a little bit more stressful. We have a bunch of bills to pay coming up between bottling, between harvest. You know, it's a little bit of a cash crunch. We're doing all right, but you know, it's the normal stressors of life. You know, things are, you know, we're having to cinch down the belt a little bit more. Sometimes that happens. It's a little stressful, but we know we've ridden these waves before. It's not too hard to pick yourself up and keep going and catch the next wave that'll really do well for your business. So that is a stressor, albeit it's not the crux of the issue that we're getting into today. The bigger one that kind of comes around from time to time is realistically kind of the disingenuous nature that the wine industry somehow and for some reason decides to perpetuate into the future. And it is something that, you know, it's just something that we've kind of touched on, you know, especially when it comes to kind of like the wine additive conversation. That's kind of where this is really stemming from. But it's happened even more recently with some seminars that we've been to, with some meetings and kind of collaborative efforts within the broader Napa wine industry. And I think it might be a surprise to those of you that listen to this show, because we've talked a little bit about the additive side of things and like why, you know, wineries are either disclose some of the things they use in their winemaking or why they don't. And that how certain products are utilized and marketed in a way to wineries by saying, hey, by the way, you can use this in the wine. And by the way, you don't have to tell a damn soul. You don't have to mention this in any way, shape, or form. You can sweep this under the rug and it can be like it never happened. And of course, it's disingenuous. Of course, I think that's, you know, a lie of omission. I think that's something that should not be happening. And I think it's something that wineries should be much more open about. But this kind of takes it one step further. There was a recent seminar that we attended, and it was all about smoke issues and fire issues. For those of you that may or may not be aware, there's an enormous fire in Northern California called the Park Fire. It's a few hundred thousand acres. Luckily, it's mostly like grassland, woodland. It hasn't threatened any major towns or anything of that nature. It was very close to the town of Paradise, which some of you may remember was in the news a couple years back because it burned to the ground. This fire was started by some knucklehead, and that's probably the nicest thing I could say about him, who decided to light his car on fire and then push it into a ravine. And that's what started this fire, is arson. And you're just like, why the hell would anyone ever do something like that? But it, of course, sparked, no pun intended, but I guess here we are, this conversation of there's going to be smoke in the air, you know, fire season is upon us. What can we do to mitigate, you know, fires in particular, but also any potential smoke damage? Because as many of you now know, but maybe some of you don't, is that smoke can ruin a harvest for us because those smoke particles are absorbed into the grapes. As a result, it can volatilize within a wine and it can make your wine literally taste like an ashtray. It sucks. It's really bad and can ruin a year for us. So this has obviously been ever since 2017 when we had those fires blow over into Santa Rosa and Sonoma. Of course, the 2020 fire season that we had that affected us, you know, it was literally a quarter of a mile the fire was from where I'm standing in my home right now. Very close to home in 2020. And ever since that time, there's been an immense amount of research and money dumped into, like, how can we mitigate this? What can we do? What are the risk factors? How can we measure them? But one of the major kind of marketing agencies here in the Valley had put together this seminar. And they very specifically told us not to talk about it with consumers. And that this is stuff that is meant to be for winemaking teams, for winemakers, for people within the industry. Yet, the questions that are being posed in these seminars, albeit they're a little bit geekier because, you know, as winemakers, we're trying to figure out, like, what are these exact risk factors? What are the trigger points? What are the molecules and enzymes and things involved that we could potentially utilize to our advantage or that are working against us to, you know, make a good wine versus a ashtray wine? So it was very interesting from a scientific perspective. We had some of the top researchers in the field talking with us about some of this stuff. And it was fascinating information. But it really, it was like a knife to the side of just one of my pet peeves about, hey, don't share this with people. Don't let people know what's going on. Don't let people should, this is not for, you know, kind of public consumption. This needs to stay behind the scenes. And frankly, you know, if you've been listening for a while, you know, if you've been listening to this show for any period of time, you know by now that I have such a huge problem with that. It's sitting there and listening to the seminar and as it was kind of introduced and that topic was brought up of like, hey, this needs to kind of stay behind closed doors as a conversation. I was furious. Like honestly, I knew I needed to be there. I needed to listen to what people had to say because it was a very important seminar to be a part of. But at the same time, like, I just want to shut this off. Like, if this is, if you're really going to close people out of this and not inform people on, like, what's going on behind the scenes here, why are we even having this conversation? Like, this is, this 2-hour meeting could have been an email. Why are we doing this? Send us the PowerPoint slides and just let us, you know, evaluate on our own, or send us the bullet points of kind of where the research is and let's just move on. Why are we having a full-blown conversation about this? It was so frustrating. So frustrating. And, you know, maybe I interpreted it a little bit wrong. Maybe I kind of jumped the gun on things a little bit and was like, well, you know, maybe we're just waiting until the research is a little bit more solid. I mean, it is work in progress. We're talking about years of work that's being put in by these researchers until they can have results that are reliable. And they showed us some of the trends and things to look out for and kind of where the major risk factors are and potentially how we can mitigate, you know, smoke in the air when it's present, if it's present in and around vineyards. But again, you know, it's scientific research. This takes time. You have to test theories. And by the way, we only have one grape harvest a year. So if you're going to be testing things out in the vineyard, you have a one shot, basically one shot. You can do multiple iterations across many vineyards, right? But obviously, there's a very finite amount of time that you have to do this, and now you have to compile and analyze results and kind of come up with, you know, these best practices after that. So maybe I understand it from that perspective, that like, hey, this is all work in progress. We don't want to share a lot of this information just yet because it's not accurate yet. We don't know enough to actually make public announcements about how, you know, vineyards and wineries are going to operate when it comes to the challenges presented by smoke and fires near wine grapes during the growing season. Okay, fine. I get that. But at the crux of the issue, whether it's this, whether it's additives going into wine, whether it's the information that is or is not present on a winery's website or on a back label, y'all know by now that my biggest pet peeve about the wine industry, bar none, is the fact that there's an active kind of push to shelter consumers from what actually goes on behind the scenes. You know, whether or not you care, like we'll use another example because I'm holding up my iPhone for those that are not watching. Whether or not you care about where, you know, this phone is made, whatever phone you have in your pocket, where it's made, how it's made, why it's as affordable as it might be, maybe you don't care about that at all. It's just a phone. You need to be able to doom scroll through whatever social media platform you're on and then make a phone call or a text every once in a while, check email from time to time. It doesn't really matter. You're so far removed from it that how that contraption is actually put together is what it is. That's how it's made. It showed up in my local store. I bought it online. It's at my front door now, and I can just plug in a SIM card and run with it. For some reason, I think wine is a little bit different because it is something that we actually consume and put into our bodies. And that if people have genuine questions about how a wine is made, where it's coming from, the processes involved, the materials involved, the risks involved, in the case of like smoke and whatnot. Those are things that we should be open and upfront about. So I don't want to call out, you know, this seminar too much in particular, but it just struck a nerve because we talk so much about what can actually go into wine and winemaking and why I believe that we should be more open and honest and upfront about it. And for those that maybe you're listening to this or you're relatively new to the show, the reason I believe this and the reason why I think wine does a really shit-tastic job of being honest and upfront with people is because wine is still so intimidating for so many people. So many people. We had a little get-together amongst some of our club members not a couple of weeks ago, and this topic kind of came up in terms of consumption around the U.S. because, you know, everything's kind of down in the alcohol industry right now, especially when it comes to Napa and it comes to wine. And we're talking about like where are the potential upsides, right? And we're looking at people that consume beer and liquor. To put things kind of into perspective for you, right now, beer, I think it passed liquor officially in 2022. You can look up some of these numbers. They should be pretty readily available. It's all kind of based on per capita consumption. There wasn't a great number for beer, but researchers knew that beer had surpassed liquor consumption in recent history, you know, in the last couple of years. To put that in perspective, liquor consumption is somewhere between like 2 and 3 gallons per capita over the course of a calendar year, roughly, which probably sounds a little bit obscene, but you think of like having a cocktail every, you know, couple of nights, or, you know, going out to dinner or making yourself that martini. Like over the course of 365 days, a couple of gallons, you know, kind of makes some sense, right? If you divide that up over the course of many, many days. So beer surpasses that. Beer is ahead of that. Wine in the United States falls at basically half, maybe up to like 2/3 of a gallon per year. Way below where these other beverages land. And we're talking about like, and we're trying to figure out like, why is that? Like wine is such a great part of life. Like it enhances food. It's great with, you know, company. Like there's no reason that it shouldn't like supplant and steal a little bit of market share from these things. And it came back to this issue that wine is still so intimidating that there are gatekeepers actively preventing people from learning more about it, because for whatever reason, they think that their authority and their expertise on wine needs to be held on to. That, hey, if you don't have that sommelier pin, or if you're not in the industry, or you don't understand, you know, what this enzyme does over the course of processing fruit and getting it into a fermentation, that if you don't understand that stuff and you're not in tune with it, that you probably just shouldn't know about it. Let us make our wine and talk about this stuff in our own little vacuum, away from public eye, and let's not bother you with it. And frankly, I feel as though that attitude creates more fear and trepidation within consumers. Because if you don't understand what it is you're actually consuming, are you going to take a chance on it? Pause for dramatic effect. Right? You know? If for some reason, I mean, the amount, and we talked about this during this conversation too, where you're looking up and down a wine list or in a wine shop and you're like, man, I don't even know where to start. Shoot, it happens to me. I don't know where to start on most wine lists. You know, I have a leg up because I'm in the industry and I know some of the producers and kind of what to expect. But there are plenty of times I walk into a restaurant and I'm like, I don't recognize anything on this list. None of it really sounds great. I guess I'll just have a beer or a cocktail. I do that. And I'm in the industry. I'm the one, like, I should be at the forefront with the flag, like, charging in battle here. Like, hey, I'm only drinking California or only drinking Napa wine because that's what we do here. You know, like many small European towns and countries. Like, if you go to a small town in Europe, whether you're somewhere in France, Italy, Spain, whatever, you know, typically if you go into a local restaurant, they're going to have whatever wines are locally available. They're not necessarily going to have stuff from a neighboring town, much less a neighboring country. They support that cool small industry because it's built for that small area, right? Like that's what they do. And it's so different here in the US. And they've embraced it so much more. And it's just a different way of doing things. And that's fine. You know, different countries and cultures and things evolve different ways. So whatever. Let's set that aside for now, I suppose. But if we're truly going to get more people, because obviously there's a lot more people consuming a lot more beer and a lot more liquor than wine. Those are the front runners by a mile. Like the Olympics are wrapped up, I think, at this point. But imagine like you going out and competing in the 100 meter dash against Lyle, right? That won for the US, or Sha'Carri Richardson. Like go race them and see how you do. That, like, that's, you are in this situation, are the wine industry, they are the beer and liquor industry. they're so far ahead of us. They're so far ahead of us. So how do we combat that? How do we combat that? And I think the one thing that wine truly has not done a good job of is bringing people into the fold and trying to provide relatable, interesting and captivating information about what we do and how we do it, which is why on this show we dive into things like the additives. We dive into the process and the business. And I'm trying to drag people kicking and screaming into wine and being like, come on, come with me. It's going to be fine. It's not that intimidating. Just let me show you the path. That's what we're trying to do here. And I'm sure I've scared some of you. You know, I'm sure, you know, we did the additive like catalog episode a couple weeks back. And, you know, I had a lot to say about a lot of those things. Most of them, as I mentioned in that show, they don't bother me. They don't. Because you're simply capitalizing on what is already readily available in the grapes that we utilize. You're not using a lot of synthetic materials like PVPP or Velcorin. You're utilizing stuff that's naturally occurring in the grapes or in the barrels. And you're like, okay, we're just, yeah, it's an additive, but you know, it is what it is. It's like adding MSG to a dish in your favorite like Chinese restaurant. Like it's just a little something to give it a little something extra. It's not bad for you. It's just, yeah, you're kind of giving it a push. It's a little bit more manufacturing, right? Fine, whatever. I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't necessarily want to do that with my wines, but there are plenty of people and no one's putting MSG in their wine. I mean, maybe they are, but I've never heard of it. I think there was a cooperage. Shoot, I did hear of a cooperage that was very specifically trying to craft a barrel that like leaned into like umami type flavors. And the running joke for all of us winemakers was like, how much MSG are we getting in that barrel? And that's not at all what was happening, but it was a very interesting conversation. You know, we have to have our fun too, guys. Come on. We have to have our fun and joke about this. I got to take my jacket off. It was like chilly this morning. So I've had my jacket on. It's like 11 o'clock as I'm recording this. It's officially warming up. This office always gets a little warmer for some reason. It's right up against the garage too, which isn't super well insulated like to my right. So it always starts like warming up in this place. Plus I got my really cool Merlot shirt on, which if you're watching, you can see. I love this shirt. So I got to show it off at least a little bit. I guess through the camera though, you can only see like the top part of the picture. Anyway, I digress. All right, where were we? Transparency. I think transparency, you know, when it comes to wine is such a huge problem for the industry. And it's something we need to get better at. I don't think there's any two ways around. I think people understand, you know, I think consumers, and maybe I'm wrong, but even myself, I'm a consumer of liquor and beer. I really don't know a lot about brewing beer other than what the materials are. I couldn't even tell you what the, you know, top fermentations are versus the ones that aren't, if they're warmer or colder. Like, I don't even know. I don't even have that off the top of my head. I just don't. I just know I like lagers typically. Every once in a while, I'll have a hazy IPA. Very typically, I like farmhouse and like sour style beers. I don't really know anything about making them. But when someone says like, oh, this was a barrel like Russian River, you know, over in Santa Rosa, one of our, you know, amazing craft breweries out here, good old Pliny the Elder, which some of you are familiar with as a double IPA that's been just iconic forever. They do some amazing barrel-aged sours, one that's fermented with Brettanomyces. And I'm like, oh, Brettanomyces is that wild yeast that creates this like, you know, horse saddle, hay, Band-Aid-y kind of characteristic in wine, but it creates this really beautiful, you know, like sour beer. Like it's a beautiful thing. I love it. Like I know, like I'm a casual consumer of beer and even for liquor for that matter. Like I have no idea what it takes to make bourbon. Like I know the materials involved between, you know, whether you're doing like a certain amount of wheat, rye, whatever, you're using, you know, all new American oak for bourbon, you know, which is why, you know, all bourbons are whiskeys, but not all whiskeys are bourbons, right? Like I kind of know some of the basic nomenclature and cliches, but I don't really know anything about it, but I know enough to be dangerous. And it all seems so much more simple. Like it's very easy to dive into any one of those things and be like, oh, you know, this IPA was, you know, we use Cascade hops instead of these hops. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I don't really know what that means, but that makes sense. It's a hoppy beer, and the Cascades are a pretty cool mountain range in the Pacific Northwest. So, hey, that works, right? Where if I say, hey, this is, you know, St. Helena, you know, Cabernet Sauvignon that was fermented for 14 days on the skins, and then we extended the maceration for, you know, 3 weeks, and then after that we barreled down into some used barrels, some French oak barrels, some American oak barrels. Hell, we even kept a little bit in stainless steel. We aged it for 2 years, and then we finally decided to blend and bottle it. I mean, it's just it seems for me a little bit more complicated. I don't want to diminish what great breweries, what great distilleries are doing, because there's some amazing products out there. But wine just, I think, inherently seems a little bit more complicated and a little bit more variable, of course, from year in and year out. We have our one shot every year to make great wine, where if you screw up a batch of beer, you can have a new batch in a couple of weeks, right? So it's not to disparage or like say that beer is like lesser than, or that liquor is lesser than, because they're not. They're not. They're completely different sports. You know, you can't compare the two. But I still feel as though, you know, grabbing a cocktail, grabbing a beer is just so much easier for people than wine. And we need to find ways as an industry to make it more accessible for people. So anytime, going back to kind of the crux of the issue, anytime we get an email from a lab that says, hey, use this product, you don't have to tell consumers about it. Hey, let's go to this meeting, but please don't share anything with consumers. Hey, you know, this is obviously too complicated. Don't try and think that you can just present this kind of information to people because they're just not going to understand. It's like, well, teach a man to fish. Shoot. Like, yeah, he might not understand how to tie a hook to a line now, but maybe in a couple of weeks of practice, you don't have to teach the guy to fish anymore. He can just fish for himself and feed his family. That's kind of the mentality I'm taking with this. So I don't want to throw too much shade because I understand the trepidation in sharing some of this information. I understand. I really do. Because it's complicated. There's a lot of chemistry involved. There's a lot of science involved. And shoot, I struggle with it. And if I've been making wine for going on 15 years now, and I still have a hard time with it, I can't imagine what it's like for someone who just enjoys wine casually from time to time. Like, it can be super complicated. So I'm trying to figure out, like, where's the balance? Like, how do we meet in the middle somewhere? Because we don't want to overwhelm you guys. You know, if you're listening to a podcast like this, like, I've probably overwhelmed you in some way, shape, or form. Like, we talk about a lot of stuff on this show that's probably, like, whew, right over your head. But hopefully it spurs a little bit of intrigue and interest in, like, what really goes on behind the scenes in a winery, you know? And I think because that's it's cool to know, like, what, how stuff is made and the trials and tribulations of going from, you know, grapes on a vine to a bottle of wine in, you know, 3 years it takes to do that in some situations. Why can't you do it in 6 months? Well, let's talk about it. Let's bring you into our world. So that's really been the goal of this show from day one, is to try and be as transparent as possible. Shoot, it's why we have started completely overhauling all of our labels and have a page on our websites now that includes all of this technical data and how things actually happen and what processes we utilized in our winemaking. The reason we do it is because, not because we are trying to scare you and not because we feel like guilty in any way, shape, or form, but every other food and beverage industry has to do this. Every other food and beverage industry has to have a table of contents, nutrition facts, things of that nature. Maybe Gatorade doesn't get into exactly how Gatorade is made, but at least you have some basic information of, like, hey, here's what's actually in this, you know, light blue Gatorade Frost, you know, which the light blue Gatorade Frost is the best flavor. There's no comparison. Don't at me. Like, dark blue is like a very distant second, and then it's everything else. Like, let's not kid ourselves. Light blue is the best Gatorade flavor. If you say lemon lime, please don't. Just don't, okay? Just don't. So maybe you don't know how that Gatorade is made. Maybe you don't know how hot Cheetos are made or what actually goes into that, you know, McDonald's Big Mac. But at least you have an idea of what is in there from an ingredient standpoint, from a calorie standpoint, in the table of contents. You know, alcohol, as in general, between wine, beer, and liquor, we work in this giant gray area where it's like, yeah, there's stuff in there. It's about it, you know? At least with beer and, like, liquor, you know the materials, right? I mean, there's plenty of additives and other stuff that you can use in those as well, but at least, you know, it's kind of simple. It's like, oh yeah, we're distilling, you know, wheat and rye. It's like, oh yeah, we're fermenting like malt, hops, and, you know, stuff together. It's, you know, it seems simpler. And I don't know why, like, wine has like this barrier that is so hard for us to get up, over, around, or through. I just don't understand it. But not having these conversations with people who enjoy wine or who are just getting into wine or wanting to learn more, it's not going to help. Like, do you honestly think, like, do people in this industry, like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Like, do people in this industry honestly think that, you know, acting like the Wizard of Oz, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, in this case, the winemaker, pay no attention to them. Just here's what we're selling you. Just drink it. Don't ask any questions. Just enjoy it. That seems weird, right? That seems weird. So, like, when it comes to, like, because some of this stuff is fascinating. And, like, going back to the smoke taint thing, because this is still a question that we get. You know, we're 4 years removed from this last big fire season. Of course, we have that asshat who started this giant park fire in California, you know, this year. And we're already getting questions like, hey, like, it's fire season again. Like, what do you guys, are you guys mitigating anything? Is it actually looking like it's going to be tough? Is there going to be good wine made? We're still dealing with stuff. We're still answering questions about 2020 right now. And we need to be able to have good answers for people. You know, we can't have a conference call like we did the other week and be like, all right, cool. We have all this great information. Let's not share it. Let's keep it to ourselves. Let's not put consumers at ease and let them know that we are doing everything that we can to find ways to mitigate smoke issues, to make the highest quality wines we can. Like, the researchers that are at the front of this are doing amazing work. There's so much more information now that we have than what we had 4 years ago. And realistically, this information would definitely, it puts me at ease. If it's putting me at ease, it should definitely put you, the consumer, at ease, knowing that, like, hey, there's great stuff happening in research right now to find ways, like, hey, there's going to be smoke in and around the vineyard. Can we put any materials on the grapes to, like, act as a barrier to prevent it from absorbing as much smoke? Turns out there are options for that. But you have to make sure that now you have to take that material and, like, rinse off your grapes. It's like rinsing produce when you get home. You have to take that off. And if another batch of smoke comes through, then you have to reapply it and prevent it. It's like sunscreen. You have to keep reapplying it to protect yourself, right? That's kind of what we're working on, you know, in this field with grapes. You know, once, you know, you're making wine and, hey, the markers and the molecules of smoke taint are present, what can you do to potentially remove them? They're coming up with, they're calling them, it's because it's this molecule called a guaiacol and 4-methyl guaiacol that are the kind of like the actual like things that can create smoky and ashy characteristics in your wine when they volatilize. And they're coming up with enzyme and things that they're calling glycosides. For those that don't know, if you add like sides to that, it means that it like it kills it. It gets rid of this. It removes it. Like, they're actively coming up with ways to remove this stuff and mitigate it in a wine. Like, that's so cool. That's so cool. Look at how far we've come in 4 years of research. Granted, there's still so much work that has to be done because a lot of this is in its testing phase. We don't know if we found a silver bullet for this just yet, but at least we're throwing stuff against the wall to see if it sticks. Like, how cool is that? Why wouldn't we want to share that with the world and be like, hey, we know you're concerned about this. Like, you see, you know, the clickbait bullshit news that we have on air right now. As soon as a fire happens in California, they act as if the entire state's burning down and it's going to be a wasteland in a year. Obviously not the case, but hey, you like California wine and your priorities are straight. You're like, hey, I know California's burning down, but what's going on with the wine grapes? Right? I had to throw that jab in there. I just had to. Like, I know the states and I know there's 300,000 acres on fire right now, but what's going on with the wine grapes? Right? But you hear that in the news, you see that on the news, and it's like, shoot, like, what are these, like, can they do anything? Is it just going to be another bad year of wine? Are we not going to be able to drink any 2024 wine from California? And the answer is absolutely you can. Look at what we're doing to try and mitigate this stuff. Also, there hasn't been any smoke, like, in or around Napa at all. You'll be fine. You know, northern California and sweeping into Oregon, it might be a little bit of a different story. But make no mistake, folks up there who are making wine are going through the same stuff. They're trying to figure it out, too. We're all on the same page working together to try and mitigate this stuff. And it's amazing. It's amazing. And you all should know that. We should help put you at ease when stuff like this happens. When we talk about the catalog of additives that we went through and stuff that can be utilized in the winemaking process. And even in that book, I have it right here in front of me. For those of you that didn't listen to that episode, we went through an entire catalog from a lab that we source our yeast from. And there is just pages and pages. I mean, there's over 100 pages of stuff in here that we can utilize in our winemaking if we so choose. Do we? No, we don't use all that stuff because there's no need for us to. But I would rather you know about it, because if you're somewhat worried about, you know, consuming things that are heavily manufactured or overly processed, like, these are the questions that you should be asking. And if you can't get a straight answer from somebody, that should be a red flag, right? That's how it is. Actually, there was during this kind of wine club get together we had at the beginning of the month, it was a Howl Mountain wine. Shoot, what was the name of it? But I'd never heard of it before. And I brought up the website real quick, just started kind of casually looking through it. And sure enough, they're doing a lot of what we do. They're like, hey, like, here's the stuff that we use in our winemaking. Here's the numbers. Here's the stuff that we don't use. You know, here's like our MO. Like, here's how we do things. And the materials involved in that. And I'm like, that's so great. I know nothing about this brand. I don't know the people. I don't know what the wine tastes like. But I'm going to have to look that up. I'll see if I can find it again. But I'm going to look it up. And I'm going to go there and be like, hey, I really, like, as another person in the industry, I really appreciate the fact that you're presenting this information to people. Because, you know, you're being transparent. And I think you're putting people's minds at ease that they can trust you and the product you're producing. Whether they like it or not, subjective. You know, hopefully they do. Hopefully they find a great wine from you. But at least you're casting that line, right? Ugh. It's just, at times I scratch my head. I'm like, why even bother trying to fight this fight? Why stand on this soapbox and speak into a microphone for almost 40 minutes about it? Because it feels like I'm just a wheel spinning in the mud. Like, it's going nowhere fast. These are moments within winemaking where I get frustrated. I kind of get down on it. And I'm like, man, this is just, it's not a winnable battle. Like, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's just no way to get there. But we're going to try. We're not going anywhere. We're going to continue fighting the good fight. We're going to continue talking about this stuff. We're going to try to continue giving those of you that listen to the show, those that hopefully listen to it in the future, people that come to Napa or other wine countries, we're going to try our best as small producers to give you great tools to understand wine, to enjoy wine, to make it less intimidating, and to be able to trust what you're actually enjoying at home. That's what we're going to do. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. Thank you for listening as I get up on my soapbox for this episode. It was very cathartic. I gotta tell you that. I feel a lot better. I was feeling very feisty, very antsy over the last couple of weeks, kind of figuring out how I wanted to record this, because I didn't want it to be just a bitch fest of, you know, I didn't want to complain. I wanted to try and come up with, hey, like, here's salute. Anyone can complain, right? Yeah, anyone who's managed people before, it's like your biggest pet peeve. It's like, don't just complain or have a problem. Be solution oriented. What can you do? What are the things that, you know, give me a plan of action here. And I think that's what we're trying to do, is we have a problem in that wine is intimidating. People don't understand it. And people are inherently scared of sharing what can actually go into winemaking and what's happening behind the scenes. Well, shoot, here's how we're going to mitigate that. We're going to be open and honest and upfront. We're going to open that door, and whether or not a consumer or anybody who's remotely interested in wine decides to walk through, at least give them the option to walk through the door. Don't shut it. Don't leave it locked. Just open the door and let them in. If they choose to join us, great. If not, great. That's fine. To each their own. Again, thank you all so much for tuning in. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines, YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, social network formerly known as Twitter. Any questions that you may have, we've got some great ones lined up for the end of the month from some of you all. Very excited to get into them. Be sure to head to our website, mtgawines.com. You can scroll down a little bit on the homepage to find the little email form to submit questions for our monthly Q&A. You can also slide into any of our DMs. Be sure to share this with any and all wine lovers that you think might find it interesting. And hopefully we'll see you out on the road later this fall, or even out here at the winery during the harvest season. We'll be, of course, hosting guests out at the winery to kind of really bring you into our world. And we'll be back on the road in November. We already have trips planned too. We're looking at going back out to Missouri. We're going to be in Atlanta. We're going to be in Charlotte. We're going to be in Tampa. We're going to be in all over the place come November. And then back down to like Southern California in early December. We're doing all the things. So hopefully we'll see you out and about or here in Napa sometime soon. Love you guys. Take care. Have a great day, rest of your week, and we will see you next time on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.